This week marks the 5-year anniversary of Pope Francis's papacy. A lot of news outlets are using this moment as a check-in, a review to explore how the Pope has done as leader of the Catholic Church. People are taking stock of the pontiff, his famous "Who am I to judge" comment about a gay priest that disaffected Catholics saw as an opening on homosexuality. His cautious opening to allow Catholics who remarry outside the church to receive communion, some would say he is revolutionary. Others see him straying from moral grounds. And the Vatican, though, is seizing this moment with a new film released about him called A Man of His Word. Father Stephen Avella is taking this all in. He is a Catholic priest and a history professor at Marquette University. Father Stephen Avella, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good morning to all your listeners.
Well, from your vantage point as a professor and as a priest, it feels like you're able to evaluate Pope Francis both from this historical perspective, but also from a very personal one. What is on your mind right now about Pope Francis's tenure?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a priest of nearly 40 years, and I find Pope Francis refreshing. I find Pope Francis to be humble and honest. I don't find him to be perfect, but I am a historian, and I have studied and taught about the papacy, and I have yet to find one pope who was perfect, who made every decision that pleased me, or even was always in the best interest of the church. But my assessment of him after these 5 years is mostly positive. I think he has done a great deal to revitalize the church in some very critical areas. I have to tell you this. After he was elected, and because of the way he conducted himself on a number of fronts, I had no less than 20 people, I'm not exaggerating, 20 people come to me who had left the church, who had walked away disaffected or unhappy, and said, "I'm coming back. He inspires me. He gives me hope." Now, whether all those folks have persevered or not, I'm not sure. People can be fickle, or they can be moved by sort of transitory circumstances. But overall, my assessment of him is very positive. He's a good, lovable man, and I think he has, in the main, done a great deal of good for the church.
But when you read about Pope Francis, you often see the contrasts that are perhaps played up or certainly focused on, some calling him divisive, showing a conflict between traditional Catholics and more liberal Catholics. How has Pope Francis managed that divide?
Well, first of all, he's not punitive or vindictive. When I hear these things, I consider the source. And some sources are quite credible, and they pose good questions. The wonderful thing about it is that they pose questions, that one of the things that Francis has kind of resuscitated within our church that got eclipsed is the prospect of dialogue, that we talk, we engage, we go back and forth with each other. And this, I would say, is a dynamic of church history throughout. I mean, even some of our greatest doctrines have come through the process of discussion, opposition, very tempestuous and tumultuous moments. And to the extent that those objections are raised that way, good, that there should be a healthy and robust debate within the church on certain issues. Again, in some instances, I just consider the source. You know, it's a kind of we have our own version of trolls and people who, you know, who stir things up really without a lot of basis in knowledge and certainly without a lot of theological knowledge. And, that's unfortunate, but that's always been the case in the church.
It's probably fair to say, though, that Pope Francis came into the papacy with a whole lot of expectations. And it seemed pretty clear from the start that he would be a different kind of pope, even looking at some of the choices he made from pope mobiles and things like that. Can you show us some examples of the contrast, the differences between this pope and his predecessors?
Well, I mean, each person is distinct in his own way. John Paul II, a great man, grew up and contended with the oppressive tyranny of Soviet-inspired communism in Poland and all the kinds of things that had to happen for the church to survive and function there. He had a very clear set of philosophical and theological ideas, and yet also and the appeal of a showman. I mean, he commanded the world stage. 129 visits, some of them when he was quite infirm. He revitalized the papacy in some critical ways. Benedict XVI was a scholar. I mean, he's kind of a college professor like me, although I'm nowhere near as smart as he is. But he was a kind of more refined and gentle and less flamboyant man. His decision to step down from the papacy, while shocking, I think would be pretty much in character. It wasn't all about him. I'm not saying that John Paul was that way, but John Paul was more comfortable with that public adulation. I don't think Benedict was. Francis, in many ways, comes to it comfortable in his own skin. That's what I see. He respects his predecessors. He certainly has not contradicted any of them. Pope Benedict, just the other day, affirmed the essential continuity between his papacy and Francis's own, I think hopefully stilling some of the people who make these comments. Nonetheless, he certainly has his own mind, his own mindset about things, and there are certain things that he wants to move forward. He's the first pope that was not at Vatican II. All right? So we had all the Paul VI and John Paul I, John Paul II, and Benedict was one of the architects of Vatican II. He wasn't at the council, nor did he experience that dynamic, except as a young priest, a young Jesuit in Argentina. But he also has the matrix of growing up in the global South and coming to maturity there and dealing with the array of socioeconomic and political problems that are there. So, you know, he brings a perspective that I think the conclave wanted. I think the cardinals assembled wanted someone like him that speaks more directly to the pastoral needs of people. I want a church for the poor and of the poor, a poor church, he said. I mean, this emphasis on simplicity of life. Now, I have to tell you, here, simplicity of life, downsizing some of the imperial trappings of the papacy, I mean, this is a kind of a vintage approach. I hate to use the word strategy, but it's something that has perennial appeal. The poor, Mother Teresa, Francis of Assisi, Francis took his name from Francis of Assisi. This kind reasserting one of the greatest of the titles of the Pope, servant of the servants of God, Servus Servorum Dei. I mean, these are things. This has established a benchmark that is going to be operative for future popes. Paul VI was the first. Excuse me, John Paul II. Really, John Paul I was the first to refuse the triple crown, that beehive crown, refused to wear. Nobody would think of doing that again, putting on a crown and acting like some sort of an imperial lord. After Pope Francis, whoever his successors are, they're going to have second thoughts about moving back into a palace, about conducting themselves as kind of a feudal lord, putting on fancy clothes. Francis is somewhat indifferent, and again, that sense. That's a new benchmark.
Well, his focus on poverty and really walking in those types of footsteps as much as he can transcends the Catholic Church. It really speaks to a broader audience, if you will.
Oh yeah, and I would say of many of those people, those 20 some people who came, many of them cited that he lives simply. Not only talks the talk, he walks the walk, if I can use that old cliche. That made a big difference to him and a big difference to them in terms of his credibility. Yes, you really are like Jesus. You really do not seek to be served, but to serve. That sort of thing, I think, has had some very positive repercussions. One sees it here even in the United States, where bishops now are, once again, not willing to live in big mansions and, you know, choosing a much more simple lifestyle in terms of where they live. In other words, kind of demystifying the imperial aspects of church leadership, which is essentially about service.
Movie audiences also will get to see Pope Francis through a new feature film called Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. And we're talking right now with a Catholic priest and a history professor, Father Stephen Avella, about 5 years into Pope Francis. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What has been the defining moment for you with how Pope Francis has led the Catholic Church? Do you see him as the, quote, Twitter Pope? What do you make of his more higher profile decisions? A new survey out by Pew Research Center found U.S. Catholics have a wide range of answers when asked about Pope Francis's most notable action over these 5 years. Respondents credited his opening up the church and making it more accepting. An equal number recognized his humility and setting a good Christian example. We're talking about the five-year mark on the morning show. Father Stephen Avella is a Catholic priest and a professor of history at Marquette University. He stays with us. Getting your thoughts as well, do you think Pope Francis made some needed changes to the Catholic Church, or has he strayed too far from tradition? What do you want to accomplish in the next 5 years? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Father Avella, early in his tenure, Pope Francis seemed to make it abundantly clear that social justice would be a big part of what he focused on. How have we seen that play out over the past 5 years?
Well, note that one of the very first places that he visited after Pope was the island of Lampedusa, which was receiving a lot of refugees, people fleeing violence and some of them drowning en route. Right away, he singled out that issue of this forced international migration, the millions and millions of refugees that are now pressing on the borders of other countries and others because of violence and dislocation and dysfunction in their own countries. So he's made that issue. He's called the world repeatedly, including here in the United States, to be sensitive to the foreigner, to the alien among you, to the orphan, to the widow. When he spoke at that, an amazing moment, amazing historically and an amazing in other ways. When he spoke to the Congress of the United States, when he came to the United States, he laid that out there. He said, "You are a nation of immigrants, and you should be faithful to your heritage." So he brings that up. Now, that's not a message, as particularly in today's political climate, that resonates with people, including a number of Catholics. But nonetheless, he feels compelled to bring that forward. He also has made a concern as his concern, and a concern of the church, the care of the environment. What are we doing to our planet Earth? How do the ways we treat Earth, how is that going to affect the common good? And that's a very important Catholic term. How are environmental policies, how are industrial policies, how are concerns about the environment, about climate change, all of these things, how are these things going to affect everybody? And particularly, what are their impacts going to be on the poor of the earth? I would single out these two things, immigration and concern for the environment, as two very forceful messages that consistently come from him, particularly about migrants and refugees.
Well, he put out this tweet in 2015, "The earth, our home, is beginning to look like an immense pile of filth." Can you talk about Pope Francis's push to perhaps frame climate change as a moral issue of our time?
Well, that's exactly what you said, is that these public decisions have moral components to them. in much the same way as a budget would, as much the same way as any kind of public policy would. It affects a variety of people. What does this do for people? How does this enhance their inherent dignity, their worth, their value in the eyes of God and each other? And this embrace of the climate is not, embrace of environmentalism or the concern for the environment is not new to him or unique to him. Others have spoken to this before. But he seizes the moment where this really is a major international concern, and he injects this dimension to it. Okay, that's about, carbon taxes and international agreements and so on and so forth. It's got all that policy, those policy components. But the measure of any good policy is how does it affect people? How does it, particularly for Catholics, how does it affect the poor? And does this create poverty? Does this exacerbate poverty? Does this further push people down who are struggling to survive? So it's, making this a moral issue is, much in line with what other popes have done and what the Church tries to do when it holds up a mirror to the world or to individual societies and says, stop and think what you're doing and what the implications will be.
Let's look at some of the more harsh criticisms of this pope. There have been pieces out there, this one in The Guardian, really taking the pope to task on two issues revolving around the Catholic Church, sex abuse and the role of women. Let's start with the first. A column that ran in the National Catholic Reporter earlier this year had this to say about the issue. The overwhelming consensus in the media is that Pope Francis has a blind spot when it comes to sexual abuse. How would you respond to how he has confronted sex abuse or not in the Catholic Church?
I think it's a definite failing. I think particularly focused in recent weeks with the situation with this bishop in Chile and the covering up or the ignoring or perhaps the not knowledge of this the survivor's letter that he got that he claimed he didn't know anything about. So I'm not going to make any apologies for that. And also, I was in Rome last year and about this time, and the big issue there was the resignation of a survivor, Marie Collins, from this papal commission on the sexual abuse of minors. And that created a huge furor because she went out with a blast saying, I can't get anything done. I can't, that infernal bureaucracy over there. I don't want to tar all those folks over there in Rome because some of them are very hardworking, decent people. But this working through this thing, dealing with the myriad of cultural understandings of what this issue means, this blocks needed and important reform. So yes, I would agree with what the NCR said, that this needs more work. This needs more sustained attention. He's restarted this commission. It's 18 people on this commission, and there's got to be more tangible advance on these things. It began really with Pope Benedict. Pope Benedict kind of moved this forward, the zero tolerance policies. A lot more work to be done there, a lot more work.
And so what?
I won't. Francis needs to be more hands-on with this.
Okay, and so what do you mean by that? What could the Pope do to address this? Is it going to a zero tolerance? And what would that look like?
Well, I mean, here in the United States, we have zero tolerance, supposedly. I mean, that's the way an accusation, first of all, benches you. You can't function as a priest until this thing is investigated. And if it's proven to be true, as it is in many instances, you're done. You're out. And you're also handed over to law enforcement. I mean, law enforcement is brought in right away. There's no, we'll handle this in-house. So that's kind of what it looks like. But there also has to be a much more expeditious way of dealing with these accusations, particularly if they're leveled against the hierarchy. That's the next step that I think the Pope has immediate jurisdiction over. There's an archbishop in the Pacific, I think he's from, not Guam, maybe Guam, that has been accused. He's been brought back to Rome for trial and all that. But the question of bishop accountability is another issue here, that he's the immediate boss of the bishops. He can remove them, he can summon them to Rome, he can and he's done that with some people. I mean, with some bishops who have acted up badly, he's summoned them to Rome. I think there needs to be more vigorous and visible repercussions on that level for bishops who don't handle this well. This bishop in Chile, if he really is guilty of what they're accusing him of, he's got to go. He's got to step down. He's got to be, I don't know what they're going to do with him, but he can't be bishop anymore. He does not have the credibility to be a bishop.
Father Stephen Avella is with us. He's a Catholic priest and a Marquette history professor, talking about 5 years into Pope Francis. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. How would you rate the tenure so far of Pope Francis? Do you think he's made some needed changes to the Catholic Church, or has he strayed too far from doctrine, from tradition? Are there issues you think he hasn't addressed adequately? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Kenneth, who is waiting in Janesville. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. One of the things that has not been said, Pope Francis has even gone further to decentralize the church, in that he said he wants the local church to be the emergency room for souls, the end-all and be-all of what the church is about, for bringing souls to heaven, and the local church to be the most important place in the world, not Rome, and that, he would go about his business of appointing bishops and so forth, but the most important person is the pastor.
At the local church. Yeah, Kenna, thank you so much for bringing that into the conversation. The emergency room for souls is the local church. Father Avella?
I think what he said was the field hospital. I like that image even better. That in the midst of a busy and sometimes very challenging life, the church should be there to heal, to offer mercy. Now, there's a motif of Francis's papacy, but I agree with Kenneth. Tip O'Neill supposedly said all politics is local. Well, for Catholics, their Catholic experience is their parish, their pastor, the people who work in the parish, the activities of the parish. That's where they touch base with the most profound realities of Catholic Christianity, the Eucharist, the sacraments, the community of faith that we form. And Kenneth is right that the Pope, one of the things the Pope has tried to do is to decentralize, which was something that Vatican II really attempted to bring forward. He calls it synodality, that you ask people. Perfect example. He had this Synod on the Family, which issued Amoris Laetitia, which some people are very upset with, or at least portions of it. But in preparation for that synod, he issued a questionnaire to people and asked them. I responded to it. Anybody could respond. I responded to it, asking a bunch of questions, and then these materials were collated, and I assume poured over by those who prepared and deliberated about the synod and reported to the Holy Father. He's having a synod on young people, and he's doing the same thing. He's asking young people. So let's start to resuscitate and to bring back to life the voice of the church from the bottom up, the people of God, who, according to one understanding of the church, that is the church. The church is the people, to use a
But many parishes are in flux. We're seeing consolidation of churches. We're seeing a lot more empty pews. Is that a broader issue than what Pope Francis can turn around?
Well, you've got an ongoing historical situation there that has two facets. One, there has been a drop off in the Catholic faith. Here in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, the last statistic I saw was from 2002 maybe to about 2012, maybe a little farther, there were 60,000 people dropped away from the church. Now, why did this happen? Some people moved away. They moved to Florida or wherever to get away from the cold or what have you. Or they're fed up with the church. They don't find it inspiring or they don't hear anything that really helps them in their life or anything like that. The other thing that you deal with here is demographic change. The church was one time very strong and powerful in the cities. You can still see these grand old churches that many of them are abandoned, some of them have been sold, some are still barely functioning. But the large chunk of the Catholic population has moved into the suburbs and now into the exurbs. And so those churches, I used to help the church in Mequon in Thiensville. I mean, those churches were quite full. I helped recently in Cedarburg, Wisconsin. We're big congregations of people. On that same Sunday, if I were to say Mass in some places here on the south side of Milwaukee where I live, you have smallish crowds. They're not down to nothing, but they're not very big or robust as they were when the church was originally built. So you've got those two things going on. The former, demographic change is not something that the Pope can do anything about. But the question of making Christianity credible, of encouraging a pastoral style, I think this is where he goes, of encouraging a pastoral style that is a merciful. We're not here to judge you or make your life miserable. We're here, he likes this word, to accompany you. We're going to meet you on your own terms. We're not going to judge you. And we're going to accompany you. I think this the release of this dynamic into the church and into the hearts of clergy and other professionals, there's laypersons, religious sisters, and others who work within the church. The release of this dynamic, I think, is one of the solutions to drawing people back to Catholicism. Catholicism has an appeal to people's symbolic and cultural sense, the liturgy. The music, the ambiance of being in a Catholic church resonates deeply with people's deepest spiritual aspirations. Others prefer word churches, like the Elmbrook Church and other places like that, where the emphasis is on a good sermon, a positive sermon. Now, Catholic priests should give good sermons too, so should deacons. But our emphasis on word and sacrament is tremendously appealing. So I think what Francis urges when he keeps emphasizing mercy, have mercy, be merciful, welcome people, don't be grumpy, don't be a sourpuss, come on, reach out to people, I think is one of the ways in which he tries to address this question of the decline of religious practice.
Pope Francis marked the fifth anniversary of his election, and that has a number of papal observers taking stock, as we are here on the morning show. One cause the Pope is accused of neglecting is the role of women in the Catholic Church. And last week, a coalition of Catholic women gathered in Rome to demand that he provide women with a voice and a place at the decision-making table in the Catholic Church. But in 2016, he did create a study commission on ordaining women deacons. We're having a discussion about the pontiff 5 years in with Father Stephen Avella. He is a Catholic priest and a Marquette history professor. You can join into this conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think Pope Francis has made some changes to the Catholic Church, or has he strayed too far from tradition? Are there issues that he has addressed that you appreciate, or ones that you feel he has much work to do? Call in 800-642-1234. Email your thoughts, ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update right here on the Ideas Network. Pope Francis marked his fifth anniversary as Pope Tuesday. Pope Emeritus Benedict's resignation paved the way for Pope Francis's election on March 13th, 2013. There is a divide on his legacy to date, whether he's seen as this dynamic new approach to what it means to be Catholic or whether he's treading on church doctrine and being too liberal on Vatican positions on issues like same-sex marriage, contraception, divorce, and the role of women in the church. Father Stephen Avella is our guide in this conversation. He's a history professor at Marquette and a Catholic priest. Your thoughts on Pope Francis are welcome at 800-642-1234. What do you think should be the role of women in the Catholic Church? 5 years in, what is your assessment of Pope Francis? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Pat now, joining us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Pat.
Hello. I want to thank you for having this wonderful guest. I'm 88 years old, and having grown up in the old pre-Vatican II church, I'm so grateful for the Pope Francis and his attitude. I think he's really saved the church from the kind of bureaucratic, judgmental ways. I know he's not completely in about roles of women, but you know, at 88, I know you can't have everything all at once. So I for one, think he's articulated everything I feel about the church. It's wonderful to have an academic and historian speak it so accurately. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. Father Avella, go ahead.
Thank you, Pat. You made me feel good today. Yes, I share your enthusiasm for the Pope. I'm a historian, and so it's hard for me to see the world, you know, in a kind of a dualistic way, all good, all evil, he's good, he's bad. Human beings are a mixture of darkness and light, and in any pontificate, and we've had over about 265, 266 popes, you can find, for the most part, good and evil. I mean, in some instances, all evil, like in, you know, the Dark Ages, where popes were replaced regularly by their successors. But it is a fair estimation to say that, you know, I think Francis is a work in progress. I hope he's around for a bit longer. I certainly applaud some of the decisions that he's made about the appointment of bishops, Cardinal Tobin in Newark, Cardinal Supich in Chicago, and we're seeing this in other places around the country. You're getting a style of bishop who is very pastoral, very receptive. In the Washington, D.C., you know, they took that pastoral that he wrote, or that response to the Synod on Amoris Laetitia, and they figured out a way not just to focus on the more controversial aspects of it, but as implementing it as kind of a pastoral plan in the diocese. How are we going to spread this? How are we going to talk about this critical issue of the family, which is something that the church wants to say something about? And I applaud that kind of approach to things. The bishops who talk that way, who bring that forward, often cite Francis and his particular appeal. Change the doctrine or the authentic teaching of the church, but they find, very much in the spirit of Vatican II, ways in which to make the gospel speak to a new generation. How do we take this living word of the living Christ and speak it to a new time so that it makes sense, that the gospel is portrayed in an idiom that people can understand and accept, be challenged by, and also move forward with?
Well, Pat said also at her age, at 88, she can't have everything in terms of looking at the role of women in the Catholic Church. But can you address that? Because here in this era of Me Too and Time's Up, is this something the Pope will really need to take action on?
I would hope so. I mean, that's my hope, is that women will have positions of visible authority and access to the church. The question of ordination, of course, is the big one. But I consider it, again, as a historian, a big breakthrough that he's going to study this question of the ordination of women to the diaconate, that he's impaneled a committee of experts to study this. And to, you know, I'm not a theologian, strictly speaking. I studied theology, but I'm not a theologian. But it seems to me there are precedents in the early church of deaconesses. And who were they? What does this happen? How did this happen? And might this be something that would be of importance and relevance in the changing world? The role of women in the United States here and the role of women in the world is something that is of pressing and urgent concern. It needs to be addressed. It's not going to go away. You're not going to click your heels three times and say, go away, women. It's something that is there that has grown in intensity and in depth. And I think Francis has done that. One other thing. Francis has also given the option, or at least signaled, that he's willing to consider the marriage of diocesan clergy, okay, priests, the mm-hmm. priests married, which would be a critical response to the needs of the church, not only here in the United States, but also in the global south, in places like Brazil, where there's one priest for every 10,000 people or something like that. Maybe I'm wrong on that statistic, but the consideration of allowing matrimony for diocesan priests, not for religious order priests, because they've got a community that reinforces their commitment to celibate chastity, but that, I think, also, if that were to happen, that also would make a significant impact on the discussion of this question of women in the church and how this can be addressed and move forward. I see progress. It's not great progress. It's not wonderful.
How long does it take to move a needle? Because he created the study commission on looking at ordaining women deacons. That was back in 2016. We're here in 2018. How long does it take to evolve?
Well, you're asking an academic about how long it takes to study something. The short answer is a long time. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of information. There's likely a lot of debate and discussion that's going on. The church is a human institution and is going to be beset by politics. Certainly, there's probably people who think this is a terrible idea and we shouldn't do this, that this is, you know, they would point to the example of other churches that have permitted women in ministry and, oh, what a disaster. I mean, I think that's all, I don't believe that. So you've got this dynamic going on. Moreover, you've got an international church that has got different points of view about the role and status of women in their community now, in their cultures. So I mean, reconciling this, working with this. I mean, this is like getting something through the United Nations. you have to do it. I'm not making excuses for it. I wish it would move forward. It's certainly an issue that has been studied for a long time. I wish they would expedite it and move it forward. I think personally that it would be a positive step forward, and I hope to see more change on this.
There's still
a lag here.
Let's try to squeeze a call or two in here. John in Milwaukee has been waiting a long time. John, go ahead.
Bergoglio has been an unbelievable disaster for those of us who hold fast to the mass of Pius V. This is a man who, as a cardinal priest in Argentina, forced his people to go 87 miles to attend the Mass of Pius V. We have Summorum Pontificem, the motu proprio of Benedict XVI, that allows this Mass to be liberally given to Catholics. His first pronouncements as Pope castigated us as traditionalists, as some type of subgroup within the church. And it is a mark, it is a dark mark on the church. The only congregations that are growing in the world are those congregations that have the Mass of Pius V. Our church in Milwaukee at St. Stanislaus, you can't even get a seat for the High Mass at 10 o'clock.
John, thank you so much. Father Avella, go ahead, since we're short on time.
That permission granted by Benedict XVI is still operative. This gentleman doesn't have to go 87 miles to go to a Latin Mass, and it's clearly an option that is permitted by the church, albeit. I don't know about the veracity of the statement that they're the only church that's growing. I see growth in a lot of different parishes that don't have the Latin Mass at all. Latin Mass is a cherished part of our tradition. Maybe it should not have been done away with as it was. However, we had a council, and we had one of the first declarations of that council, Sacrosanctum Concilium, was on the restoration of the liturgy, on the renovation of the liturgy. So at the very highest level of our church's teaching, an ecumenical council convened by the Pope, liturgical changes were set in place. Among them was the translation of the Mass into the vernacular. Now, I have to say, as an experience of a priest of 40 years, and I grew up with the Latin Mass, I can still serve the Latin Mass, intro ibo ad altari Dei, I can do the whole thing. And I love and reverence the music and the tradition of that, that the spiritual experience on the people hearing the Word of God and also the Mass in their own language has been dynamic. It has released an important restoration and renovation in the church. And, God bless those who want the Latin Mass, who find it appealing, they should be able to have it, they should be able to access it. But I think the majority of Catholics prefer the Mass in their own language, and particularly prefer hearing the Word of God in their own language.
And in the last 15 seconds here, Father Avella, what is your one hope for Pope Francis in the next 5 years?
I'm hoping he continues on the path of making the church the voice of the poor, speaking for them, speaking for those who have no voice, speaking truth to power that may not accept his understanding of how an economy should be structured, how the world should treat people who are fleeing for their lives from places of war and desolation and the impact of climate change. I hope he continues on this path. I also hope that he continues to encourage local discussion.
And we're going to have to leave it right there. Father Stephen Avella, thank you so much for joining us.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
Father Stephen Avella is a Catholic priest and a history professor at Marquette University. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Keely Baltina. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.